Radio.
Breaking down barriers and assumptions in abortion. A talk by Debbie Garrett for the Catholic Society of St. Peter's Abortion Panel, held during Life Week at the University of Sydney.
I wasn't sure how long I was going to have to speak, so someone please give me a signal. I'll try to keep it very short, but I've brought some material with me. But mostly what I want to do is tell you what the focus of my work is, and then give you perhaps a few facts and figures, and you can then, you know, obviously there's going to be time for questions after that. So my work is primarily around identifying the unmet needs of women experiencing unintended and challenging pregnancies. And then ensuring that both the public and professional sectors have access to that information, as well as credible, factual, evidence-based information about the potential harm of some reproductive health decisions, and that includes abortion. We also discuss other issues such as IVF, etc. We're not a religiously based or affiliated organisation. We work on the social issues and the medical and health issues only. The other thing we've really worked hard to do is try to break through the ideological barriers and the language associated with abortion, where at one end of the ideological spectrum, we can often hear language and ideas which demonise women who may consider or have abortions, or who speak with regret about their abortions later, and so those women really have nowhere to go. And at the other end, we have the same kinds of demonising language, which I saw aptly demonstrated, you know, we were targeted on Facebook last night, you know, by protesters of this event, toward people, women or men, who are working to advocate for healthier solutions, social solutions and health solutions for women, and who want to educate about the potential harms of abortion. We highlight the many coercive factors around abortion, including those social factors and relational factors, and challenge the lack of informed consent processes with regards to abortion that don't exist in other health settings. We also challenge the inconsistency in law in relation to abortion, particularly with regard to minors, and I'll give you a little bit of information about how that works. By protesting us talking about these issues, and I did put some invitations on that Facebook page for the people who were protesting to please come in and hear us out. I'm not sure if any are in here, but if you are, everyone is welcome. But if you have done that courageously, you are really, really welcome, and I welcome your questions. But what those kinds of protests demonstrate to me when I do get the opportunities to speak, particularly to young women, is a fear. And it's a fear that if we talk too much about the potential harm of abortion or other solutions than abortion, that we won't have abortion available to them. And their fears with regards to that are about they won't have access to education, they'll miss out on their career, you know, their chosen career, promotions in their workplace, they may end up alone and unsupported, economically disadvantaged. Those fears can be very, very valid, and I think we need to pay attention to them. What we all need to pay attention to on all ends of the ideological spectrum, though, is that what abortion has done, what the availability has done, is not address any of those social, educational or professional issues for women. So I'm often accused when I talk to people about abortion of trying to throw women back to the 50s because, you know, they'll be stuck in their homes and dependent on people. And my counter to that is, well, abortion hasn't got us very far as women then, has it? If that's the best we can do for women is force them to choose between their children and those other options, then we've really failed them. So I think the passion and the outrage of young protesters is understandable. It could be very powerful if we can do what I think really needs to be done in that, and that is start finding some common ground on which to improve the lives of all women. I had children young. I had my first child when I was 17, my second when I was 20. I raised them on my own until I married at age 35, did 3 degrees at uni in that time. So I'm not I don't not know how challenging all of those things are, and I think that women do need much greater supports to do it. I'm sorry we don't have the PowerPoint, because I do actually have some pretty pictures, but what I do want to go through very quickly is a little bit of an overview of abortion. We do have between 80 and 90,000 abortions annually in Australia. We don't know the figure because accurate statistics aren't kept, except on post 20-week abortions, so I will be able to give you some accurate figures there. The reasons for abortions are mostly psychosocial, so they fit under the social, emotional, and supportive and relational needs of women around, I don't have enough money, or nowhere to live, or no one to support me, or my partner doesn't want a baby, or this is the wrong time, I'm too old, too young, I have too many children, etc., etc. So around 5% are for reasons of congenital abnormality of the unborn child, health reasons of the mother, and a very small percentage about sexual assault, pregnancies as a result of sexual assault. The argument for abortion is often that we need abortion to save the lives of mothers. Well, if we only used abortion to save the lives of mothers, invariably we would probably have many years where we had zero. In the UK in 2012, there were 185,122 abortions. Not one had to be done to save the life of the woman. So out of, you know, over 185,000, not one of them was necessary. So in Australia, when I really like to draw on the research that is done by abortion advocacy organisations, mostly because it is theoretically less open to criticism when you present their own research. It's not always the case. But a study done in 2007 by Melbourne Uni researchers through women presenting at the Pregnancy Advisory Service down there showed that 16% of women reported being in a violent relationship. And there are still, I still read stories all the time about, well, women in domestic violence situations need access to abortion because their partners might beat them or their partners don't want more children. I rarely hear from abortion advocacy organisations that we need to be doing something more about the domestic violence experienced by these women and helping them to get out of violent situations, helping them to have processes whereby they won't have to continue to engage on a lifelong basis with this man if they have a child. 10% had mental health problems. We know that having a mental health problem makes you far more likely to suffer psychologically after an abortion. 51% had a healthcare card. That's relevant because we know too that economics are a big reason for lots of women's abortions. 75% of women cited reasons that were more associated with just simply not wanting a child right now. And there were some other reasons around that, but it still was consistent that 95% of those were psychosocial. We know that with most of those cases from the international evidence that when a woman says, I have too many children, I don't have, I'm too young, or I want to finish my education, or I don't have enough money, that what she's saying when qualitative interviews are done is that, well, this is the best of all the bad choices. This is all I can do. So it's more about doing something she doesn't really want to do, but she can't find a way to do the other thing. So I believe, as do many researchers and health professionals, that that's very coercive. You know, we can't say that women don't experience social coercion in that regard. It's around 70% of women in some international research studies that will say they felt pressured toward an abortion they didn't want. In Australia, that's about 63,000 women every year, or 250 women every working day of the year having an abortion they don't really want. So coercion is really, really, really significant. And something that is often unaddressed, or at least not debated well with abortion advocates, which I think is sad. I do just want to, so that we've got lots of time for questions, the only other thing I do want to talk to you about is late-term abortion, because I think that here is one of those areas where it's very, very difficult to get accurate information into the mainstream. And if you are going to argue a position whether you have a philosophy that is against abortion or a philosophy that is looking for better supports for women, or you're sitting in the middle ground, or you have an abortion advocacy position, you really have to be able to shore up your position with the facts and not have the ideological arguments throw you off the facts. We've put these facts out on our website, and we still often get messages come through the website saying, you know, you're a bunch of bigoted, religious, lying nutters, because none of that stuff is true, even though we put the actual government reports on the website. So, you know, it's very, very difficult to break through that ideology. But the number of late-term abortions becomes significant when you consider community attitudes around abortion. The percentage of people who support abortion reduces dramatically once you start looking at past 12 weeks, let alone past 20 weeks and past 24 weeks. And yet in Victoria, and I'm only going to give you Victorian figures, in Victoria, in 2009, 10 and 11, and 2011 is the latest year we have figures for, we had 410, 366 and 378, respectively, post-20-week abortions. So I'm just giving you those 3 years as an example. More than half of those abortions in every one of those years and the 7 years preceding that were for psychosocial reasons, not for health reasons of the mother and not for health reasons of the unborn child. Now, when we talk about congenital reasons with unborn children as well, we're not talking about conditions that are necessarily going to end the life of the child either. Women have abortions for surgically correctable conditions all the time, cleft lip, club foot, you know, often very minor things. In 2011, of 378 post-20-week abortions, 183 of them were for psychosocial reasons. So that's a lot of women who are being offered a surgical solution to their primarily social problem at a point where they are more than halfway through their pregnancy. More alarming is that 10 of those women were after 28 weeks. So well past the point of viability. At 28 weeks, their child had a 95% chance of surviving without any problems, and one after 37 weeks. Now, given what we had in the media when the wrong twin was terminated at the Royal Melbourne Hospital, the community outrage when a healthy baby was accidentally terminated, do you all remember seeing those headlines? Instead of the unhealthy baby. I don't know why, and yet that happened in that year 183 times. A healthy, viable baby was terminated and those women didn't get the other options. But one of them was at full term in that year, and that doesn't even get out into the media. So these are really important facts that I think must start to put us in some common ground with those who are advocating abortion.
That was a talk by Debbie Garrett on breaking down the assumptions of abortion. And for more interviews, talks, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.